Wilson, the Healing Rebel podcast. For time there, I'll start that
I
again.
know, I was going to
Welcome
say.
to the I Am Jane Wilson Healing Rebel podcast. It's getting a wee bit sticky for some reason. This is great. Just as we start, the Wi-Fi starts to play up. Typical, typical. Right,
Oh,
this
just as
week,
many times as you want.
we'll just start whenever. So this week I have got Livvy Brooks on the podcast. Now, Livvy was recommended to me by Julie from Unicorn Cup, who was on a few episodes ago when we were talking about Unicorn Cup and menstrual cycles and how to use the cup and what benefits they are. She was sharing her education around the products that we can use, and she said that Livvy would be somebody that would be really good to come on and have a chat to. Now, Livvy hasn't been very well for the last few days, so I am very grateful that she's given us some of her energy today to talk about her business, her project, and learn a little bit more about female health and menstrual cycles. So, Livvy, thank you so much for being here. Welcome to the podcast. Why don't you introduce yourself and your business?
Okay, thank you for having me. So my name is Livvy and I started Bloody Amazing about a year ago. The reason I started Bloody Amazing, well, there's so many reasons actually. So I'll just go through the ones that ring true at this moment. So I'm an endometriosis sufferer like yourself. I've got grade two endometriosis, and I, like many people, I think I was severely messed around by the NHS, which is not me belittling the NHS. I'm very grateful for the NHS and all that they do, but women's health and endometriosis in particular, like they have some things to learn. So I went through just debilitating heavy periods since I was 14. And like you, I guess, kind of thought they were normal. No one really spoke to me about periods. I didn't have like the most straightforward relationship with my mum growing up, and she had like one of those periods that you see like the always adverts playing like tennis in your white shorts, like that's kind of period my mum had, so she never really had like cause to talk about it with me. So when I was 14, I started fainting because of blood loss. I also started just passing really heavy, like horrible clots. And until I was about 17, I just thought it was normal to like miss a couple of days of school, not be able to do PE, just feel like death warmed up for 5, 6 days of the month because no one told me that wasn't normal. And it wasn't until I had like sort of older female friends, not like older as in like they were older than me, but we were older together, and they would talk to me about their cycles, and I'd be like, "You mean you're not like dead on the floor? How is that?" And that's when I started learning more about it, I guess, and having more conversations with people my age, older, people who are menopausal, etc. And the thing that they had in common is that no one spoke to us about it. Most of the time you had to learn about like your body yourself and do a lot of your own research. And as you know, like women's health research can be a bit hit or miss at times. So you can come out with like just misinformation really that can make things more harmful for you, especially when you've got like GPs and doctors who are saying to you like just go on the pill and all'll be all right. Which I feel like is the biggest sort of health myth out there. Just take the pill and your period will be normal and your period will regulate, when what actually happens on the pill isn't a period. But yeah, don't get me started on that because that's a whole other rant. So I started Bloody Amazing just because I didn't want anyone to go through the stuff that I went through, really. Like, I wanted to have a system whereby women and girls and other people who've got periods who don't necessarily identify that way could speak about their periods in a safe space, but also have information that was available to them for free. Because I know a lot of the information, it's so like inaccessible, not necessarily financially, but because it takes a lot of them energy to access it or find the right people to talk about it with. So I wanted to have as much information as possible out there for people, and also just create a community for people to talk about these things without shame or without fear of repercussions. I don't know if that's enough. Like, you might want to ask more. I don't know. It's all that's coming to me right now.
That is so vitally important. So, as I was saying before we started recording, I've only just been get I'm just sort of in the process of being diagnosed with endometriosis. I don't know if I've got symptoms of it, and I say that because I also have Crohn's disease, and a lot of the symptoms cross over between the two conditions. And the only thing that I am now aware of, and that was from speaking to Julie, is that I have a very heavy bleed. I didn't know that you weren't supposed to lose 80 to 100 mils a day. I don't have particularly painful periods, but I do have a lot of bowel issues, and I always put that down to having Crohn's. But when I'm getting my tests done through gastro just now, they're like, your inflammation markers are all fine, there's nothing wrong with you. And I'm like, but my bowel movements are not normal. I'm either constipated or I've got diarrhea. I'm eating all the things that I should, quote unquote, should be eating, that should give me healthy bowel movements, and that's not right. So something in my body's not right. And they were just like, don't know. But they happened when I was getting an MRI for a Crohn's complication. They noticed that there was scarring on my uterus that was indicative of endometriosis. So that was why they wanted to start exploring further to try and find out what it is, so that they can categorise me. And when I only spoke to the gynaecologist 2 Saturdays ago, and she, because it was my very first appointment, telephone appointment, and she was like, so we need to get an MRI done so that we can see what surgical team that you're going to speak to, and then we'll do surgery. And I was like, right, okay, what are you going to do? Because I know loads of people that have got endometriosis that have had surgery, and they're having to go for multiple surgeries, getting the same thing repeatedly done, repeatedly done, repeatedly done. So I then started exploring online to find out as much information as I can about what endometriosis is, how does it present, what does it look like. And even the information out there, there are doctors who have endometriosis that have had to go and do their own research because their medical training never gave them any information, never mind enough information, and they're really struggling. And then statistics, as the sort of general statistic for endometriosis, is 1 in 10 women have got it. More recently, I've seen a 2 in 10, so it's 20% of women have got endometriosis. At a networking event last night, and there was 5 of us sitting, and 3 out of the 5 of us all had endometriosis. And it's like, I think it's probably more common, but because the diagnosis process, the waiting lists just now are incredible, and women being dismissed so much. So it's really important that people like yourself and anybody who can use a platform, be able to speak out, to be able to talk about what they're experiencing, what they're going through, and even things that they can do to help. Because like you were saying about the pill, I was on the pill for 21 years, so I could have had this problem for a long time, but it was being masked by being on the pill and never having a normal cycle. It's tough being a woman in this world of medicine that didn't include us in medical studies until the 90s.
It still doesn't seem like we're that important. Just trying to access things at the moment. Like, my endometriosis journey has been so different in comparison to other people I've spoken to. I mean, I do have quite a lot of connections in the endo world just from being part of Bloody Amazing, and a lot of my friends, like yourself, in networking events, I come across a lot of people who have endometriosis too. It's like we all attract each other somehow. So I was diagnosed privately because I couldn't actually get access to a gynaecologist that would take me seriously on the NHS. And I was so tired of having to like write notes, like screeds and screeds of notes, to try and like advocate for myself. Because when you've got like what's basically a chronic health condition, you know yourself, like, all of these things take energy, and like you have to make these constant like adjustments and constant decisions. Like, am I going to use this limited amount of energy going to work, meal prepping, going to the gym, or going to the doctors? And like, going to the doctors is always the last thing you want to do with your time, because more times than not, well, in my experience, you always come out of it feeling like I've not been listened to, or I've missed something, or I've been like distracted or curtailed, and I've not said everything I wanted to say. So like, I got diagnosed privately, and the surgical team couldn't have been better, but it still cost me nearly $4,000 to get diagnosed. And then after I got that private diagnosis, the NHS wouldn't even take it seriously. After that, I went for another laparoscopy. And the NHS gynecologist consultant said, like, you've got loads of scarring, you've had like what we could call it endometriosis events, but it's not really enough to diagnose you with endometriosis. And I was just like, what? And then every person I spoke to, including like a leading gynecologist like at the Expect clinic in Edinburgh, was like, that doesn't actually make clinical sense. But so I asked for a second opinion, but like every part of the process, it seems to be like gatekeeped by like a particular individual, and this individual in this instance is my gynecologist, who said I don't have enough for endometriosis, who's refusing my right to a second opinion. And that's that happened in July when I got the letter saying they're not taking it any further. And I just got the letter and I was just like, do you know what? I know I've got it. I've been told by a private clinician I've got it. My symptoms all suggest that I've got it. Like, I'm not fighting for this anymore, just to be like recognised by the NHS. And I think because my laparoscopy experience on the NHS was so awful, like, it wasn't, from what I read about, it wasn't terrible, but just in comparison to how you get treated privately, like, it just felt like I was part of like a cattle market. Like, I woke up and I told the person who did the anaesthetic that I'm really, really sensitive to anaesthetic, so not to give me a lot of it. And they were quite like shirty with me, and they were like, oh, I think we know how to do our jobs, thanks. And I was like, okay, I'm just letting you know, because I've had a lot of like dental treatment and always been really, really ill and taken ages to like come round and stuff. So it took ages for me to come round. I was an extra hour waking up, and the first thing a nurse said to me was, oh, nice of you to wake up, my shift finished an hour ago and I have to stay. And I was just like, all right, sorry. Like, that was the first thing somebody had said to me when I woke up from my surgery. It was just absolutely shocking. The ward was like tropically hot, and I just thought, it's no wonder so many people get sick in hospitals. You might also like empathize with this, but see, when I see someone who's suffering in a hospital more so than me, I just go into pure like caretaker mode. So there was this older woman that was there who was waiting for a hip replacement, and it was 2 o'clock, like 2 p.m. when I got my surgery, and she'd been sitting in a waiting room since 6 a.m. She hadn't eaten anything, and she was like nearly 90. And nobody had come to see her and ask her if she was okay. So I was like, I'm going to go and ask a surgeon about this, and it transpired that they'd forgotten about her. Like, it was just a really horrible experience, and it's one I feel like so many people go through, and it's one that I feel like we can't talk about, because there's that sort of culture of shame when you sort of say something bad about the NHS. But the thing is, it shouldn't be the case. People should be empowered by their healthcare, and people should have lovely experiences, as far as I'm concerned, because endometriosis and any other debilitating condition, that's what it is. It's debilitating, and you want to feel like you're supported by like your healthcare system that you're paying taxes to support. So that's just another rant. You're like, all I do is rant.
That's quite all right, because if these things are not said out loud, like you say, there's a lot of shame about. There was so much over the last couple of years, oh, save our NHS, our NHS is our saviour, blah blah blah. And a lot of people think about the NHS as being a free service, because they forget that our tax and national insurance pays for it, and we are paying for that service up front. Hopefully we never have to use it, but if we do have to use it, we want to have a good service. And if people don't speak out about the misgivings and mishaps that happen when they go into hospitals, then it's just going to get ignored, just get swept under the carpet. Oh, but it's the holy NHS. Like, the holy NHS is full of holes.
Absolutely, especially
that
when it comes to
women's health. Absolutely. What are the symptoms that you experience with endo?
So for me, it was always just extremely heavy bleeding, really, really. So when it was heavy, it was also really clotty. Like, I remember talking, this is really crude and it might like trigger warning for miscarriage, but like sometimes it's been so bad that it could be comparable to what like an early miscarriage looks like. Like, it's just like black, it's like really, like, it's really horrible. Like, it looks like one of those alien babies. You remember those alien babies, like growing up, you get them in the wee eggs? It's just like, yeah. It's horrible. It looks like I've laid an egg, but it's gone wrong. Sometimes if I'm not, so sometimes I can't wear a cup. I've actually had like conversations with Julie about this. So my symptoms can vary from month to month. So if I wear something internal, like it doesn't, not just a cup, so like a tampon or something like that, I get this really horrible pulsing. But it's like not, it's not pleasant. Not like any, I can't think of any sort of pulsing that is, but like, it's just like, oh, it's horrible. I can't even describe it. Like, it just, it feels like it's trying to force its way out of me. And it's really, really like painful. But I also learned, like, when I get my period, everything down there sort of flares up. So everything's like pressing on nerves, which is what causes that horrible pain. At times I've had pain that's been so like, I mean, it's not, I can't not, I can't like, I'm trying to think of the words. I can walk and stuff like that. I'm all good that way, but I've had to like stop my car and throw up on the motorway before because the pain has been so bad. There's been times where things have been so swollen, like I've struggled to walk up the stairs, because I get this sort of numbness down my legs. Icky bowel movements, like you were saying, like not so much diarrhea, maybe during like the first couple of days of my period, but I've always put that down to sort of low hormones. But I can get constipated as well, and I've noticed like if I'm constipated, that's when I get the most pain, either like vaginally or also in my womb is when I'm constipated. Just the fatigue is awful. The fatigue is something else. And I think I just feel so robbed when it happens, because I'm usually not a tired person. I've got a lot of capacity. Like I work full time, I try and manage bloody amazing. I'm also autistic, that takes a lot out of me as well. But it's just been absolutely floored for usually 3 days, and it can be really alienating not to feel part of your body as well. That's a big thing for me as well, like just feeling so alienated from this thing that's going through this experience, and I'm trying to support it the best way that I can, but it just seems a lot of the time that it's impossible.
I understand what you're saying about that feeling alienated. It's almost like you're outside looking on your body, going, "What's up? Tell me what's wrong so that I can fix it. Like, what can I do?" So, what do you do to help try and manage your symptoms?
So this has been the biggest part of my journey, I think, because I think as women we shoulder a lot of guilt, don't we? Like just generally, because we should be all things to everyone, really. So I used to absolutely force myself through life. Like even when I was feeling like I couldn't manage, I used to like drink like 8 espressos a day and just get on with it. And I would be like in absolute agony, but I just be like, this is fine, keep myself distracted, put tons on my plate at work so that I didn't have time to be in pain. But the payoff from that was I would have pain just randomly throughout the month. So another symptom of endometriosis that I can get but don't get very often is like that Mittelschmerz, like ovulation pain. But it doesn't happen as often, but it used to be like the 2 days. So day 13 and 14 is when I tend to ovulate, and I would get like this horrible debilitating like cramping pain where I'd have to like double over and just wait for it to happen. And it would be to the extent where it sort of kept me up all night. But I've made lots of adjustments in my life around my endometriosis, and that has been both a blessing and a curse. It's been a blessing because my symptoms are still awful, but they're awful for that 3 to 5 days of my period. They're not like random throughout the month. Well, they can be if I'm stressed, but it used to be the case that I would have endometriosis all year round. Like it didn't mean, or the symptoms of endometriosis all year round. But now, because I've taken time to, when I get my period, I stop. Like it doesn't matter what I'm doing, I just stop. I know it's coming, and I can usually tell you to, like down to the hour when it's coming, like because my whole body sort of tenses up in preparation for it, which is maybe something you've experienced too. And since I've just, I sound really cheesy, but surrendered to it, because I used to fight it so much, but now I just go, do you know what? This is it, we're going to stop. So I track my period, and I have done religiously for 8 years. So again, I'm so clued into when it's going to happen. So the 3 days before my period is when I start to get symptoms of, like, I guess PMS, tension, anxiety. I don't sleep. I start to get physical symptoms as well, just pain, cramping, etc. So those 3 days is when I really start bringing everything back and just thinking about like what are the priorities, what are things that cannot not happen, like work, for example. But then I'll stop things like the gym, I'll cancel social events, which maybe sounds a bit counterintuitive because they're distracting and make you feel better. But for me, what I need to do for those 3 to 5 days is just sit down and chill and really, really listen to my body, because every month's different. And I used to get into the bad habit of, oh, this was a really great month or a really great couple of months, so I can just keep adding stuff to my calendar because I know I'm okay now, everything's fine. And then it's like, oh dear, I'm not okay, I'm in a lot of pain, I can't drive my car because I can't feel my legs, like this is really problematic. So I guess, like, yeah, surrendering to it has been really, really helpful. Sometimes it can be a bit of a pain to explain to other people who don't get it, because as far as they're concerned, my illness is invisible. I'm a young, able-bodied looking girl, really. Like, there's no reason for me to be ill or be sick, especially when it looked like I was fine the day before. How come I'm suddenly not fine? So it's been, I've lost a lot of friends just from them not being able to understand it, because they've not experienced it, despite the fact that, like, what were you saying, 2 in 10 women have probably got some kind of idea in the orbit of what it feels like. But it just shows that we don't have these conversations enough, but we still have this sort of internalized shame about periods and pain, especially as women, I think.
I'm sitting here nodding at so much that you just said there about that, having to learn to surrender to it and make adjustments and adaptations, and then when you start to feel better, start adding more things in. Like, I've been so guilty of doing that myself. Like, oh, I'm well now, let's do loads more, and then it's like, oh shit. Just push myself too far and I give myself a setback. But I think that's like a societal thing, right? Like, we should be go 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 24/7. Like, if you can stand up and you can breathe, therefore you should be out working. And if you're not out filling all your time, achieving whatever all the time, then you are lazy.
Yeah.
Rather than, let's layer in self-care first. What are the non-negotiables? And then build out from there. So the networking event I was at last night, I was saying I work 3 days a week, and I'm quite strict with that. If I do choose to add something in on another day, I'll make sure that one of the working days I work, then work a half day to accommodate, so that I'm keeping my time. And one of the girls afterwards was like, did I hear you right saying that you work 3 days a week? And I was like, oh, how did you manage that? And I was like, well, Crohn's completely wiped me out and meant I couldn't work any days at all. So as I was coming back from that illness and that recovery period, I started doing what my business coach 10 years told me to do, was decide what days and times I want to work and then make that fit, rather than working all day every day and then trying to make life fit. And now it's like, so I did it this time. Wish I'd done it 10 years ago, because that might have alleviated some of the health problems coming forward, but you live and learn. But I went for some therapy to really help me get into a place of acceptance and into that place of surrender, because I was in constant fight. Why is this not better yet? I'm doing everything that I should be, and like beating my body up because I was doing all the shoots to make me better. And it was once I started going, if I just accept whatever it is on that day, it takes the pressure, it takes that stress off, and then that stops that cortisol adrenaline drive, which then lets you be in a relaxed state to let the body heal.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's good to, like, over the years, like, it's all these wee things, like, it sounds, again, sounds really cheesy, but having all these wee tools in your toolkit that, you know, make you feel at least a wee tiny bit better, like, even 1% better is better than no percent better. So for me, like, I really like those shakti mats that you lie down on, because, like, they distract you. Like, it's a different kind of pain, but it's pain you can control. And I think that's so important when you're experiencing pain that you can't control. Another thing that really helps me, again, just like going for wee walks. Like, I've got a dog who's just brilliant and I can just cuddle up with him and he's great. But having baths, like all these wee things, like hot water bottles, etc., etc. But again, I need to be so careful with hot water bottles, because I just like burn myself on them, because like I'm like, oh, I'm experiencing pain and this pain is okay, and it's distracting me from the like this internal pain. But there's so many like nice like tools out there. But I really empathize with what you're saying about the guilt, because I was spending an absolute fortune like trying to make myself feel better, because I came to sort of stalemate with the NHS because they'd refused to give me a second laparoscopy because I refused to go on the pill. So I never had a huge like scientifically backed reason or anything for not going on the pill. I was on the pill when I was a teenager to try and regulate my periods, that's what they told me. But I tried a few of them and it just wasn't for me. I just didn't like the way I felt on the pill. So I stopped taking it because I didn't see any benefit, and it didn't actually change a lot of my symptoms, probably because I wasn't taking it for long enough. I forget why I was telling you that. Sorry, COVID brain fog. But yeah, What was I saying before
that? We were talking about spent a fortune because NHS.
So because I was trying to like manage my own symptoms and try and make my own endometriosis better with the absence of anyone medical to help me, like I got myself a herbal practitioner and I was going to like acupuncture, like pelvic acupuncture. This like, I mean, the herbal lady was lovely, right? I'm not entirely sure that anything helped. It was just like a total, like, I just felt like, oh, I'm doing this naturally. Look at me. I'm so eco. Like, it's so sustainable. It wasn't really doing anything for me, though. It wasn't changing my symptoms. And she had said to me, like, just keep persevering. Like, I did that for nearly 2 years and I spent an absolute fortune. Same with, like, pelvic acupuncture. Like, I did feel initial relief for a bit after it. But I was looking at like how much I was spending every month and we were trying to save for a house and I was just thinking, this is impossible. Like, I can't do this. But there's no, like, as you'll know, for endometriosis, there's no treatment for it other than like getting a laparoscopy and getting excision or ablation surgery and getting it removed until it comes back. And then you just do it over and over and over again. So it's really frustrating that there's no sort of like holistic way that the NHS or anyone really looks at endometriosis or women's health in general, because it is so, so expensive. And then, like, I empathize what you're saying, you get that guilt and that anger, like, I'm spending all this money, I'm giving up hours of my day lying on a table and being jabbed with needles, like, why is this not giving me any reward, like, as if the universe owes you something.
Yeah, and that energy in itself is so negative to your health.
Totally.
Just the almost the words that are coming to me at this moment is I had this sense of entitlement of I am doing so, therefore you should provide me with a healthy body.
Yeah.
Shoulda, coulda, woulda. So bloody amazing. Am I right that you go into schools and talk to the kids about periods and stuff like that?
Yeah, so that's kind of one arm of bloody amazing, I guess. It's been, the school front has been a bit like hit or miss because everyone just wants you to work for free. Like, maybe you'll understand that as well. Like, so we've done like 2 school workshops which have been really, really successful, and we got really, really good feedback. But right now what we've been focusing a lot on doing is just trying to get funding. So obviously eventually we would like to be like a self-serving business of getting like money from school bookings and youth club bookings, and we're also looking at giving sort of menopause training and stuff like that. So it's not just me that's behind bloody amazing, there are a committee of 6 of us, and we all have like different areas of expertise. Like, so there's a pelvic floor physiotherapist on board, a holistic hormone health practitioner on board. So we do try and make sure that things are as accurate and as scientifically backed as possible. So the school arm is a big thing, but right now what I'm really trying to focus on is just get the message out there. So we have 3 sort of broad aims that might help just unpack what we're about. So maybe 4 actually. It's growing arms and legs. So one of them is being connected. So we're trying to get funding to do something similar to yourself, actually. Do like a podcast, but with people that we talk to in schools, so that they can share their experiences of like their cycle and their bleed and anything they want to, really anonymously, to have like a bank of resources for people who are feeling lost, who don't necessarily want to talk about their cycle or their experience, but there's a library or bank of resources for them to look at. We've also got like the website, so I get so many inquiries through the website, usually actually from parents of like usually children who are autistic, who are looking for alternative period products. But I don't mind helping people for free, just because like I know how it is to feel lost when it comes to things like that, and I don't want anyone else to feel that way. Another thing that we try to do that's connected is so one of our aims is clarity, so just making sure that's central, because there's so much information out there, and as we know, some of that even comes from like the people who are meant to give us the right information, like GPs, or sexual health practitioners, like, and they're just saying the thing because they want you to take the drug and go away, because ultimately it saves the system money, and that just isn't how it should be. So I also know that all the information that we have on Bloody Amazing is available online, but we want to take like the time out of Googling it, and trolling through forums to find the right answer. So we, like I say, we do have connections with like a gynecologist, pelvic floor physiotherapist, etc. And we know that knowledge is power, and the more that we know about our bodies, the more empowered we are to use the right choices, even if we have things like the right language. Like we've come across like so many young people who call their like vulva their vagina. And it's just simple wee things like that, like making sure that people are empowered with the right language, so if they need to go to like a health practitioner, they're describing their symptoms with as much clarity as possible, because like the statistics say, what, 20% of women will go on to have a period problem, so it is quite important. Another arm is just making sure we're as inclusive as possible. So some of the feedback we got from like transgender and non-binary people who don't identify as women necessarily but still have periods and sometimes debilitating symptoms associated with periods is that they feel like existing organisations aren't welcoming to them, because like periods are marketed towards women, or a stereotypical notion of what a woman is, like it's all pink and glittery and unicorns and lovely and beautiful, and that's not necessarily everybody's version of what a period is. So we wanted to create something that was a bit more gender neutral, not to like take away the message that women like are mainly the people that have periods. I know people can get really passionate about that, but we want to make sure we're open and inclusive to everyone, because we think that everyone should learn about periods. So we've got a partnership with an LGBT organization who I won't name because I don't know how they would feel about that, but it's just been so eye-opening for me, like talking to people who have gone through different experiences that I didn't even know were a thing, like how taking testosterone like impacts your periods and how you end up going through a testosterone induced menopause. Like these are all things I have no idea about, I will never experience myself, but like it's so important to make sure that other people do know about it, because somebody will be going through it at some point, and there isn't much information available online, and if they're transgender or whatever identity they are, they might not feel safe putting their experience online or talking to just anybody about it. So it's so important to make sure like that information's all available. So part of like our aim is to share as many experiences as possible, because even if they're not relatable, they're still valid, and they're still important. And then just lastly, like connected to what we were talking about already about that guilt, we like to try and emphasize sustainability. So we all know there's a lot of guilt about being sustainable just now, and you need to be 100% perfect, and if you're not 100% perfect, there's no point in trying, etc, etc. So I used to feel that guilt a lot, and it's something that I spoke to like Julie quite a lot about from Unicorn Cup, because I used to use a cup religiously, even though it was excruciating at times, because I had this guilt about, oh, can't buy disposable pads, can't buy tampons, because they all end up in landfill and they take 500 years to break down and the turtles will be eating them and all that stuff. But it just isn't realistic for me to have an 100% sustainable period, because I mean, you might know this yourself if you've got a heavy bleed, like sustainable products, with the exception of cups, are not made for people with heavy bleeds. Like you can get your like organic super tampons, I can soak through a super tampon in 20 minutes. Like there is no point in me getting a pack of super tampons, because it would cost me like an absolute fortune every month, but also like for what, a little bit less guilt. So I used to feel tons of guilt about it, but I don't feel as much guilt anymore, because I think even being a wee bit sustainable is like more important than being perfect. So something that I discovered really recently, which has been a revolution to me, but everyone knows about it, is period pants. I used to be like really like scared of period pants because I've got really heavy clotty periods, so I didn't want to be sitting in it, but I've just been so glad that I've been able to get used to it, because they've been a game changer. Like I've gone from using maybe like 50-60 tampons if I can't use a cup that month to using like maybe 10, because I can wear period pants when I'm in the house. I still wouldn't wear them to work because it's gross. And I just feel like, I don't know if you've ever like worn them, but the more I wear it, I'm like, oh, I'm just wearing this big nappy that's full of blood. Like that's just how it feels for me. So it's been good to, like, just to have that reduction in tampons as well. Like, I think that's good enough. And that's what I wanted to emphasize with Bloody Amazing. Like any effort you can make, and that might look different every month, every cycle, every day, like your effort is absolutely good enough. Like there's no reason for you to add to your pain already by making yourself feel guilty with some like impossible barometer that you can't actually like make.
Yeah, and that guilt, like we've said a few times, that guilt just adds to the stress in your body, which adds to your symptoms, which makes everything worse.
Yeah.
And nobody's 100% perfect in their sustainability as much as we would like to be. Like, you do the best you can with what is available to you financially, as well as based on your symptoms. I happened to, I've never experienced the really heavy bleeds into anything other than the cup, because I came off the pill and started using the cup pretty much back to back, just purely coincidentally.
Mm-hmm.
I'd happened to meet Julie at an event and we were talking about the cup, and I was kind of thinking about it, and then I was having this inner voice go, get off the pill, get off the pill, get off the pill, it's not good for you. And it was only because I'd been on it since I was 17, and I went on it so that I didn't have my period on the weekends or on holiday. That was the only reason I had gone on it, because my pals were all on it, and this was a great way to control when you had your periods, or had a bleed, because it's not a period. That it was only when I came off it, and that was for November 2017, I think it was. It was only then that I was like, oh, I didn't realise how much this had changed my personality. I didn't realise how much it had stopped me from feeling emotions. Like, I thought I was just somebody that didn't experience emotions, and that was my personality trait. I didn't realise it was because I wasn't having a hormonal cycle. I also used to be a personal trainer and teach spin classes. So for the whole month, I could teach 15 classes a week without ever feeling any negative effect of a cycle, because I was on the pill all the time. Everything was steady, so I was never honouring the cycle of the ebbs and flows of what it's like to have a hormonal cycle. And it was only coming off it and my body settling in, I was like, oh, this is an eye-opener.
Yeah, that was one of the things, like, when we taught our school workshops in partnership, we did the it was more about the hormonal cycle, because, again, sounds so cheesy, but I just think it's so beautiful, because, like you, like, when I was on the pill, my only experience that I can remember is just feeling numb all the time. And I can kind of compare it to being on antidepressants, because they had the same sort of impact on me. Like, I just didn't feel emotions, and that was apparently better. But it's so amazing, like, even speaking to teachers, like, who've sat in on workshops, and them saying, like, I didn't realise the cycle was more than just the bleed, because we don't learn about things like how important ovulation is. We don't learn, like, just how important ovulation is. We talk about the bleed, and that's the thing, but if you don't ovulate, then you don't have all these health benefits that come with ovulation, and also, like, we don't learn how to look after ourselves properly in school when we learn about, like, the cycle, because we learn about the anatomy, maybe, and we learn about, like, you, well, what I got in school is you will get your period, it will be quite uncomfortable, and we just won't ever talk about it again, that's it, see you later. Like, that was my menstrual health education, and I think that's what a lot of people get if they get it explained to them at all. And I just think, like, the whole cycle, like, if you're 28 days or 26 or 32 or whatever you are, like, it's just so lovely to be aware of, like, what to expect when you have a cycle, and how to be clued into those things, and how to do different practices to be more connected with yourself, because, like, we live in a cyclical universe, again, so cheesy, like, we're all cyclical beings, and it's so lovely to be able to have the knowledge and be empowered to just be aware of that. And also, something like I've learned from talking to individuals with, like, PMDD is their period, where we might have, like, a really horrible time, their period is the best time for them, like, emotionally, because, so, like, that's when they don't have all these, like, maybe suicidal feelings, might be extreme anger. Like, their ovulation is when they have the worst feeling ever. Like, but I'm having this thing at the moment, like, I've got COVID, I'm day 4 into COVID, but I'm day 14 of my cycle, and I have this belief, I am ovulating this week, I should feel amazing, and why don't I feel amazing? Like, I have prepared my whole month to feel amazing, and I don't. So it's just, everyone has a cycle, but that cycle might look a bit different, and it's just seeing, like, young people's faces when you're talking about, like, I like to break it down into spring, summer, autumn, and winter, which is a really, like, popular way of talking about the menstrual cycle, because, again, we can see it in our planet, we see it outside, we can relate to it. But talking about how everybody's cycle might look that bit different, and you can just see them, like, you can see the realisation in their face, and it's just such a lovely thing to experience. But also, we talked a lot about contraception when we did our workshops, because I think it's so important that young people have like the knowledge about contraception, the short and long term effects, because what 14, 15 year old is going to read a leaflet given to them with the pill? Like, I don't think very many of them are, but they only think about like the kind of thing you were saying is, oh, I can have control over my periods and this thing is quite annoying and how good would it be if I could just like stop it from happening. But we don't look at how that does have an impact on the body, and doing it again and again, of course it's going to impact the body. And the research on the impact of the pill is just in its infancy. Like, we only know so much. And obviously I'm not bad mouthing the pill, because the pill has empowered women to like work and raise a family and have birth control and be able to be empowered in different ways. But I think all things come at some sort of cost. So again, it's just, we gave out a leaflet that was just a simple sort of table, and it had the six main forms of contraception that are mainly prescribed in Scotland, but it also had the long and short term impact of those forms of contraceptions and also some benefits and drawbacks. And the reason I gave that out was not to scare anybody, but I just thought like I would love it if a young person going to the Sandyford or going to their GP to ask for contraception had this leaflet with them and could use it to spark a conversation with their GP or sexual health practitioner, and give them the language and validation to do that. But I think also it would encourage like GPs to upskill themselves as well, to be prepared for these conversations, because a lot of the time they just want you out the door in 5-10 minutes, like take the pill, see you later, have a nice life. And I just want that to stop. I want us to have these conversations, and I want GPs and everybody to just be more aware of the long-term implications of what they prescribe, because I think a lot of the time they aren't. Like, even when I woke up from my endometriosis surgery, they were like, so do you want the Mirena? And I'm like, I'm literally just back. Like, gonna give me 2 minutes. Stop trying to, like, force contraception in my throat. I don't want it.
Yeah, well, when I was on the pill, the only thing they ever spoke to me about was potential for blood clots. And I had to go in every 6 months to get my blood pressure checked, and for many, many years. And then eventually, because I'd been on the pill for so long and not had any problems, they then reduced that from every 6 months to every year. And they're like, we can see you're not overweight, you don't smoke, so you're not a high risk for blood clots. But that was the only thing out of the list that they ever spoke to me about. And they did, I mean, the doctors did say, you know, don't smoke, exercise, do the things that you can to minimise the risks of blood clots. But it's only been more recently that somebody had mentioned that Crohn's disease was also a risk factor for the pill that I was on. And when I went back and I had a packet still in the drawer, I hadn't dropped them off at the pharmacy yet for disposal, and I read through and it said that it had it on the leaflet that it's at that time it was a known risk factor, but how, like, whether it was 1 in 100 or 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 10,000, they didn't know. But if they knew, like if the doctors knew that was a risk factor, then talking to patients about gut health and making sure that they're keeping the microbiome as healthy as they possibly can to try and minimise the risk. It might not, but if you're doing everything that you can to try and mitigate potential hazards for side effects, then it has the potential for a better outcome.
Yeah, or even just like a GP saying, like, I don't remember them. I remember like doing the blood clot, like going back for my blood pressure the same as you. But even them saying at the end of an appointment, if this doesn't work for you, if you feel this way, if you even like, if you just have suspicions that this isn't right, please come back. And because there's so many different forms of the pill, there's different forms of contraception that you can try. But I think like when I speak to women about their experience of the pill and experience of GPs, they're scared to go back. And they're scared to say this isn't working, or they just stop taking it and they go without contraception when they could find something that actually works for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to say fortunate that the first one I went on to, I didn't have any obvious side effects. Like, I didn't have mood swings, I didn't have weight gain, I didn't have like spot breakouts or anything. My mum, when she had tried to go on the pill, turned into a complete psycho. Like, she was just like, she took it for a month, was absolutely nuts, and put it away and never went back on it again. And she said it just wasn't for her. But everybody's experience is different, and at different stages in your life, if you choose to go on the pill, it might be different than like when you're young versus when you're old. Like, there's so many variations to any medication that you take for anything.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you want to talk about today?
God, I don't know. maybe, I don't know. I've had a nice time though.
I'm just watching the time and I'm aware that you haven't been well and I don't want to completely wipe you out.
Oh no, I feel okay. Like if there's anything else you can think of, I think I covered pretty much everything I wanted to. I think really like I saw that you posted the other day like on your Instagram about like finding it difficult like being a small business. Was that you? Like I'm sure you posted something and I was like, oh, I really get that. And I think I'm so passionate and so motivated about this. Like, I wish that I could afford to do it full time, and I wish that I had the energy and capability to give it my all every single day. At times, that's just not possible. And I think like that's another source of guilt as well. But that's why I was so passionate. Like, I know I've kind of messed you about this morning a bit, going, "Oh, can't, will I, won't I?" But that's why ultimately I really wanted to, because I just love talking about this kind of stuff. I feel like it's so healing and it's so like empowering and it's so good. Like that's the only kind of thing that I want to sort of end in a high. And I think if anybody's listening to this and they're worried about like their periods or they're worried about any aspect of their health, like if they don't want to go for their smear, et cetera, like that's something else I could talk about. Actually, we're looking at like bringing back that HPV home testing thing and putting more pressure on the government, because there was a successful trial in Scotland but they just patched it because of money. So we're hoping to look into whether that's a possibility. And I just think it's so important, like if you're worried about anything, to reach out to someone. Like even if you're too scared to reach out to your health practitioner, like reach out to someone who might have a similar experience and get confidence and get like power from them, because like you're your own advocate. Like no one's gonna do it for you, and that's the thing like that I had to learn for myself, because I used to think when I was younger like maybe if I suffer enough someone will notice, but nobody's coming to save you. You have to like do it yourself. And you have to like look after yourself. I think that's something I would like to say.
Absolutely. And I think if you're in the early stages of getting a diagnosis or you're experiencing symptoms that you want to go to a doctor with, and you think that you might have, whether it's endometriosis, PCOS, any period related thing, or even any other health condition, speak to people that already have the health condition before you go to the doctor, to ask what questions you should be asking. Like I know loads of people that have really bad bowel issues, and they're talking to me about it, and I'm like, has the doctor done like a calprotectin inflammation marker test? No. And I'm like, well, go to them and ask them, because then they'll be able to straight away rule out whether or not you've got inflammatory bowel disease. Because if your inflammation markers are at a certain level, then they will progress you down that path. And if they're under a certain level, then they'll know it's not something that's deemed as serious at this time. But the doctors don't offer the test unless somebody asks for it. So if you can speak to somebody who's already speaking out about their health conditions, they can give you an idea of what to ask. Because when I was first getting diagnosed, people were like, remember, take loads of questions in. And I'm like, but about what? What do I need to know? Like, what are the questions I need to be asking so that I can get the answers? Because you can feel lost in a daze and really isolated when you've got a health condition coming up. Even though there's millions of us out there with health conditions, you can still feel really isolated in it. And it's, yeah, having those conversations just to give you an idea of, oh, I never thought of asking this question, or I never thought I needed to know this information, because you don't know what you don't know.
And something I like to just remind people of, and I've said it when we did school workshops as well, is like you can always take a friend with you to the GP, or take your mum, or take your gran, or take like anyone who's going to help you like speak your truth. Because I know for me, like I can get really pressured about it. Like I've got this 10-minute window and I've been preparing for this 10-minute window because I've been on this waiting list. And then like my mind just goes blank. So it's so important to have somebody who can like, I remember taking my mum when I was really young, and talking about the amount of blood I lost because I was beginning to believe it wasn't normal. And I remember the doctor like getting out like a measuring cup and he was like, this is 20 milliliters, this will be what you lose. Like you won't be losing any more than that. And it was my mum who said, like, she loses that maybe like in an hour. I mean, it wasn't that bad, but it was because I was so young and I was so like unsure of myself that I would have been like, you're right, okay, sorry, I won't come again. But it was my mum who like said, like, no, that's not right. And I think like we just need to believe people. Like, we just need to believe each other. Like, we need to stop looking, especially health practitioners, we need to just go, okay, that's your experience and I'm going to do everything that I can within my power to help you, not like belittle them or question them or make them feel small, because I think people can do that like accidentally. It's probably never on purpose. I think we're just like so stretched right now as a society, we're just looking for like the easiest way out and it's not often the right way.
Definitely. Ask questions from your peers and take support with you. For sure. Yeah. Well, Livvy, this has been such a lovely conversation.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you so much.
No, thank you for having
your time and your aim and what you do. So if anybody is interested in learning more about what you do, where is the best place for them to find you?
So we've got a website which is helpfully just www.bloodyamazing.org. We're on like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and again you'll just find it by searching Bloody Amazing. I think we're the only company that's called Bloody Amazing, so should be easily findable. But on the website, like, you'll find like everything you need to know.
Awesome. I will put that into the description.
Great.
Underneath, so that it's in wherever people are watching us, because it's on YouTube, Spotify, Google, Apple, Amazon, all of the different platforms. So wherever people are listening, I'll put the links into the description so that they can find you, and if they've got any questions, reach out and whatever it is that they need to do. So if anybody's listening to this and you know somebody who is struggling or you're struggling yourself, make sure that you share with your peers. And even if you don't know that people are struggling, sharing this information is really vital, because if you know somebody with a uterus, they will have periods unless they have taken something that stops their periods, and this just information could be so valuable and life-changing for them. So thank you so much.
No, thank you.